This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon. It's 5 minutes past one here on Cravings on a Saturday afternoon here on Joy 94.9. I'm Pete Dillon with you through until 2 o'clock. I have a challenge for you. I need a collective noun for chefs, like a gaggle of geese, a murder of crows. Give me a collective for chefs. We'll see if we can take that through this the end of this hour, right through until 2 o'clock. Yes, we are talking cravings because we do it every Saturday at 1 o'clock. Hello, I'm Pete Dillon, taking you right through now until 2 p.m. here on Joy 94.9. And I have a gathering of chefs here in the studio. I don't know what to call them. It's a murder of crows, a gaggle of geese. So I came up this morning in my wisdom with a cornucopia of chefs, and I'm wondering if you might help me today. 0427-JOY949. Tell me what you think a gathering of chefs should be called. A salad of chefs, maybe. I don't know. 1300-JOY949. You can call that number. SMS to 0427-JOY949. You can email on air at joy.org.au. They don't know that the microphones are on. Or you can indeed send a tweet to cravings_JOY949. And those people laughing and talking in the background over me. We'll start with Adam De Silva. You know him very well. He's a regular guest on this program. We haven't seen him for a while because I think he's a very busy man. It's from Coda Restaurant here in Flinders Lane, right in the city of Melbourne. Adam, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, it has been a while. I've been a very, very busy man gallivanting around the globe. And
you're never home, are you?
Never home.
Is your child know who you are when you walk in the door?
I've got two children now.
See, that's how long since we've spoken, mate. That's terrible. And a new restaurant on the go. We'll talk about that a little later, I believe. Also in the studio, she is a delight. You may know her from All About the Place. She's currently ensconced with her own cornucopia of chefs at Joe's in St Kilda, formerly Greasy Joe's. Her name is Katrina. Hi and welcome.
Hi, thank you.
It's good to finally have you in the studio as well.
Yeah, first time. A little bit nervous, but
there's nothing to be nervous about. We're just a bunch of people having a chat.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really that simple. And a man about whom Melbourne cannot be spoken. He's an integral part of our culinary tapestry. If you think of any sensible eating venue in this town, I'm sure Michael Lambie has been there at some point or another. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Pete. Great to be here.
Well, it's good to actually have you in the studio, mate. It's been a desire of mine for some time.
Thank you very much.
Because I've had a lot of your protege through these doors.
Yes, I'm sure you have.
Yes. Tony Twitchett being one of them. He and I talk about you a lot. You're at the Smith in Paran.
Yes, I've been at the Smith in Paran for 14 months now.
Is it that long?
It's that long, and it seems like it's yesterday that we opened, but it's been a great journey. It's extremely busy. You had to pry me off the stove to get me here today.
Well, my crowbar is obviously working. Mate, talk us through your history in Melbourne has been quite...
I've actually just celebrated my 17th year anniversary in Melbourne. I came to Melbourne in 1995. I was lured here by the Van Handel brothers to take over as the executive chef at the Stoke House. Way back, yeah, in 1995. From there, I was lucky enough to get into a partnership with the two Van Handel brothers and brought together Circa the Prince. So I was the original operator at Circa, which opened in 1998. 2004, I jumped into bed with Paul Mathis.
That's another, always an interesting move.
Literally.
Another great Melbourne restaurateur. And we gave birth to Taxi Dining Room.
Mm-hmm.
I think Taxi was one of my best achievements. I absolutely loved it at Taxi. Yeah. I think that we nailed it, and it was a great thing for Melbourne. I'd done a side venture of a little sort of gastro-y pub. I always had this dream of opening a pub and serving really good food. And
it's the menu, I think.
I think so, yeah. And opened a place in South Melbourne called Lamaro's with Pam Lamaro, which was a fantastic experience. And most recently, with a long-term business partner and friend, Scott Borg, we decided to try and do something a little bit new and different. So we bought an old pub and transformed it into the Smith. And we have been very busy since the day we opened. So.
Well, mate, you've just put 17 years into 2 minutes, so that's fairly impressive. Michael's here to talk about the Smith, obviously, and his 17 years. Katrina Hyam here to talk about the rebranding, I guess, of what is in a Melbourne institution, formerly Greasy Joe's, now Joe's. How long have you been at the helm?
I've only been actually there for 8 weeks now, almost 9 weeks, so I'm still fairly new and getting back into being in a kitchen after walking and selling Wynn's Deli after 3 years.
I was going to say, because that's where people may know you from, of course.
Yeah, and something that's an interesting tune.
Keep going, as you were.
And after selling Wynn's Deli, my husband and I started another business called Foodie Advocates, and we'd gone in to actually see one of the chefs at formerly Greasy Joe's, and Rob, the owner, asked me if I'd come on as one of the chefs and the head chef, and I couldn't say no, so here I am.
There you are. And Adam, how old is Coda now?
3.5 years old.
Wow.
I know, it seems like yesterday's all like, now I've got a 3-year-old daughter.
Yes.
And almost a 1-year-old son.
Wow.
So it all kind of happened.
Yes, rather
good. Every time I open a restaurant, I have a child.
Right, and there is a...
a celebrate.
Celebration, yeah, why not?
There's another one on the way. Can we talk much about that?
Yes, Tonka, which will be opened in February, and it used to house the infamous Honky Tonk Club.
Wow.
Cool. If anyone remembers, actually, people don't remember going into Honky Tonks.
I'm far too young.
They remember going in, but they don't remember coming out.
I never remember going in or out.
We'll come back and talk about that. That's obviously with Michael and Kate, your business partners at Coda. It's 13 minutes past one here on a Saturday afternoon on Joy 94.9. It is our 19th birthday this very day, the 1st of December. So Joy is turning 19. So we're almost, just a touch older than Michael Lambie's Australian career.
Want to know what's happening on Joy 94.9 in 2012? Follow us on Twitter.
Follow us on Twitter.
Facebook.
And keep up to date on news, reviews and celebrity interviews. Visit joy.org.au/Twitter and follow us today. And if you love us, like us on the Joy 94.9 Facebook page. Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Keeping you informed in 2012.
Check out Weekends on Joy.
Yes, do check out Weekends. It's the best time to listen to Joy because the best presenters are on. This is Pete Dillon with you, taking you through until 2 o'clock when the boys from Fender Bender will be in to talk all things motor vehicle. We'll take you through an hour of being rev heads, I suppose. In the studio with me, Katrina Hyam from Joe's, formerly, or FKA Greasy Joe's. Adam De Silva's here from Coda. Michael Lambie's here from The Smith. Adam, let's talk about Cook for Your Career, because this is the premise under which I brought you in today.
Yes.
This is a brilliant program that's now in its second year.
Third year. So I've been part of the inception of this Cook for Your Career, which is sponsored by, or generously sponsored by, Host Plus being one of the major superannuation funds of any restaurant, hotel, or
for the hospitality industry
in general. So they're a great organisation, and they've started an initiative where they're getting all Certificate 3 students from all TAFEs around Victoria, around Australia wide, to shortlist them by a Facebook kind of competition where they submit a recipe and everyone, the most popular and best dish wins to become a finalist. They have a cook-off during the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival at Fed Square, where myself and other great chefs like Shane Delia judge and mentor these students. And whenever one wins, with the lucky chef and restaurateur gets a nice little packet envelope of money
Yep. To further their career and also employ
the winner to start an apprenticeship.
The winner can go and then take on an apprenticeship with
a mentoring chef. As I had a winner last year.
I was going to say you've had a winner this last year. Yes. So how's your young man coming along?
Michael Frinkiel is a great young kid who's started his apprenticeship. He's progressing very well, very well. And with the money that I won, I bought a stove and named it after him.
The Frinkle stove. Is it a requirement for the judges for this competition to have no hair? I mean, you and Shane obviously have the same hairdresser.
I think it's just to be a great chef, you have to have no hair. Oh, sorry. Michael's got a mohawk at the moment.
Slowly shaving it all off.
I'm getting there, yeah. I'm getting there.
George
Colombares.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Matt Moran.
Yep, it's Andrew almost Silver. Katrina, when are you shaving your head?
Yeah, it looks like next week, hopefully.
Do you miss the Windsor Deli?
Yes, I do. I think being back in the kitchen, I don't get to interact with the customers like I used to. And what I'm finding is people are coming in to see me from Windsor Deli, so they know that I'm there now. I know that I'm doing some desserts down there and coming and visiting instead, so which is nice. It's nice to only be a suburb away from where I used to be working and the customers are coming and finding me.
Mm. And how different is it being on the pans again at an a la carte restaurant as compared to what you're doing at the deli?
It's definitely a challenge. Yesterday was 40 degree heat and I wasn't prepared to be back in the kitchen standing there in front of the grill.
I don't think anybody should have been in the kitchen yesterday. I think if it gets to 38 degrees, kitchen should be closed and people should just be forced to fend for themselves.
That's fine. No, if you wouldn't mind giving our boss a quick call.
Michael's looking at me like, are you for real?
No, our kitchen was actually cooler than outside.
Yeah, no, our kitchen was cooler. The restaurant was fantastic. It was beautiful. It was
air conditioned.
I need to speak to Rob about getting some air conditioning.
I think you do, although it's difficult with all those windows open, but you should get a nice sea breeze at least.
Yeah, we're cutting the caramel slice in the beer fridge because the top of it was starting to slide off because it was so warm in the kitchen as I was portioning it for a function, so that was interesting.
Nice. You're also making some sauces and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we're making all our own sauces, chutneys, chilies. We're actually trying to source some local chilies that we're going to be growing in the backyard as well, or in the back beer garden that we'll be redoing next year. And we're trying to establish it as Victorian produce only. Same as what a lot of chefs are now doing in Melbourne, is just being really aware of where we're getting our produce from. And
have you found Victorian rice yet?
No.
Right up on the border of Barham and Kundrook on the Murray River, there's a little biodynamic company. They're biodynamic brown rice is spectacular.
Really?
Nice.
Interesting. Yeah, they're terrific. Mm. That little area, there's Barham avocados, there's Bundara Berkshire pork, there's the people doing the rice, there's Pacton who are doing small goods, they make beautiful black puddings, all up in that one tiny little area. And the towns are be lucky to be 1,000 people in Barham.
Well, I mean, some of the stuff we're using now, the most recent one we've taken on board is the Box Grove verjus. So we're actually using that in our apple fritter instead of using it for a batter.
Mm.
And it's giving a really, really nice, not astringent sort of taste that verjus normally gets. Mm. So that's one of the things we've already put on the menu.
What do you do? What do you use it?
Verjus.
In a batter?
Using it in a batter. Oh, so it's stopping the acidity, which has been quite good, bringing out the apples.
What's the recipe? How do you do it?
I'm turn curious. Off my microphone and walk away and just let you three discuss, and I'll just play some messages in between.
Yeah,
that'd be lovely.
We've taken that, and we've also taken Pumpkin Seed Meal Company on, and we're actually making our own little fritters and all sorts of stuff using the meal instead of using almond meal to make it gluten-free and nut-free. So
I reckon you've got to keep that verjuice recipe close to your chest. maybe you might steal it.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the ones that's in Victoria. So
it's Victorian produced verjuice.
It's completely Victorian produce. It's only an hour and a half. And what I like doing with the rest of our chefs, same as, again, everybody else, is taking our chefs out there. And we're going to go to Hopkins River and see the beef in a couple of weeks as well. And just educating chefs is my biggest priority at the moment.
Are they hard to educate, Michael Lambie?
Can be. I think everyone thinks that they know best. But I've seen a lot of chefs come and go in my time in Melbourne and had a lot of really, really talented people through my kitchens as well, which has been fantastic for the industry.
Has there been a highlight in the 17 years for you? Because it's, like I said, you're very much a part of the culinary tapestry that we have here. It's a rich tapestry and you know, you've contributed extraordinarily
Look, I think my highlight was actually opening Taxi in 2004 and sort of reinventing myself a little bit. You know, I'm from England and I used to, you know, trained in France and ran a 3-star Michelin restaurant, Marco Pierre White, in London, and I came to Melbourne thinking I was going to set the world on fire, and I sort of didn't, and I had to really sort of look at myself and go, you know, is this food that you're trying to cook really suited to Melbourne? And I kind of realized that it wasn't, so I actually, you know, educated myself, traveled to Asia, met Paul Mathis, came up with a concept for Taxi and put it all into practice, and we nailed it, you know. We won Restaurant of the Year in 2006, and it was a really real highlight. It was fantastic,
as I'm sure each of the other restaurants have been.
They've all been good for different reasons. You know I loved working at the Stoke House. I think that it was really hard. It was really busy. And when I first went to the Stoke House, it was a very different animal to what it is now. It was a lot more casual. And, you know, I remember battling with the owners about the main course prices because they wanted to keep everything under $20.
Right.
And now it's like $50 for a main course. And
well, Adam, you've seen this similar thing in Melbourne, the genesis of our food culture and how it's grown even the last 10 years. I mean, we've always been up there. I think the last 10 years, Melbourne has just gone ahead in leaps and bounds. Do you have a theory as to why, or is it...
Why? Well, I think we've got a fantastic city. Just we're so multicultural, got so many different influences. It's like Michael said, you know, he went to Japan, turned into his hand to a bit of Asian, Japanese. You know, I think we've got really authentic cultures here.
Yep.
And it's not a mishmash or fusion of them. And I think all our chefs are really quite educated. They've all travelled the world. All the chefs come in here, you know, like people like Michael Lambie and Paul Wilson, you know, Ian Curley influencing that. And then also, you know, people like Andrew McConnell going to Hong Kong and coming back and bringing all these beautiful, great skills. And also, chefs these days are much more educated and much more worldly, because the world's such a small place with all the technology. So I think everyone knows what's going on, and we have a high standard.
I think the standard in Melbourne's really high. Like you go overseas and you're expecting, like, I have a lot of my boys that work for me and they're all going, oh, we're going to go and work in London. And I'm like, you know what? You're going to be disappointed, because the standard in Melbourne is fantastic. It is really good.
And we are comparable to London, to New York.
On a world stage, Melbourne's up there. And I think, you know, you see all the fine dining restaurants in Europe, in America, they're all struggling. Whereas, you know, Australia's kicking on. You know, we've got a really diverse food culture.
It's part of that chef dream, though. As an apprentice, you go, I want to go overseas and I want to go experience and I want to go do these stages. And yeah, completely agree. You come back here and realize how good Melbourne and home actually is.
I just walked out the kitchen and said, no, I'm not going back. It's too hard. After 5 or 6 years, I thought it was just a bit crazy for me.
It's a hard life.
It is a difficult life, and it's an unsocial life. You know, I don't know, you obviously each have your own situations where, you know, Adam, you're married with a couple of kids. Katrina, you're married. Michael, I don't know if you're married or not. None of my beeswax. You've got lives out that you've got to try and manage outside of work. And when you're working late nights and long days, it's obviously very difficult.
But I also think that, you know, one of the things that really appealed to me about Australia is that everything is manageable. You know, it's a lot more sort of management friendly. You know, in London, you're expected to start work at 7 and finish at 12 at night. And if you can get a 5-minute break and have something to eat, you've done really well. Whereas in Melbourne now, you know, my team, everyone works 7 shifts. They all work 40 to 45 hours. They all get paid really well. My head chef works Monday to Friday. Like, it's managed really well. And that's due to the fact that when I first came to Melbourne, I was given a lot of really good training that I probably wouldn't have got if I'd stayed in Europe. So, you know, it's...
Makes for a different beast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have a 9-month-old daughter, and, I mean, I was in Windsor Deli because it was my business until, like, a day before she was actually born, which was crazy. But now, being at Joe's, I actually have that time because the boss is flexible and my team becomes flexible so that they are exactly the same. Now doing the 45 hours as opposed to the 80, which is what we were doing, or I certainly was doing as an apprentice at the point. Yeah, it definitely is a changing sort of environment at the moment.
It's hard now. You know, young kids don't want to be chefs now.
Unless they want to be master chefs.
They want to be investment bankers. It's hard to get people to want to actually be in this industry.
And there is an absolute shortage of chefs in Melbourne, and that's why this program, Adam, that you're involved with is so important.
Exactly. Yeah. Cook for Your Career is a great initiative, and that's why I support it since day dot and still am. I'm going to be a judge next year again, and it's just great to see the talent out there and also encourage talent in the industry, encourage people to come and cook and give them a real life insight to what it is like to be a chef. It is fun, but it is hard work. So you have to do the hard work and it becomes quite rewarding.
Well, and that is the same with any career. And I think anybody that thinks that they're going to walk into a management position or a senior position in a kitchen or can appear on a television show and walk away and open a restaurant, they might be dreaming.
It might just be Gen Y, you know. They all know
everything now.
Everything now.
I want everything now.
You know, I had an interview recently with someone that wanted to be the next best hottest chef in Melbourne, and they were like, but I only work Monday to Friday and I don't work dinners and I want $1,000 a week.
Yeah, how about you rack off would have been my very polite answer. It is 27 minutes past and we're going to have some messages. We might even have a little bit of a track, and we'll be back with Michael Lambie, Katrina Hyam and Adam De Silva here on Cravings on Joy 94.9 on World AIDS Day and the 19th birthday of the gas station in the nation, Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Guy Grossi and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
It's 27 minutes to 2 here on a Saturday afternoon on Joy 94.9. Adam De Silva is in the studio from Coda and...
Soon to be Tonka.
He's about to talk through Tonka. Katrina Hyams here from Joe's, formerly known as Greasy Joe's. I have to keep saying that because people sort of don't know what Joe's is.
Yeah,
and Michael Lambie, he's here from The Smith. Adam, Tonka, we talked about that briefly before. Tonka's opening in when?
February, hopefully, if everything goes to plan and the stars align. You know what builders are like or construction is like.
It's a nightmare. What is Tonka going to be similar to Coda in its philosophy?
It's going to be same but different.
Right.
So the similar menu structure of menu, but this goes, if anyone's been a Coda, it's not, we got a bar, but it's not really a bar. It's more of an eating bar. So actually, Tonka's actually going to be half bar and half restaurant. So we can, sell more alcohol and make more money. As Michael will know, you don't make money off food, you make money off the alcohol.
You do make money off booze, indeed.
That's why he's blinding me with his gold Rolex.
People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones out of the silver. If we talk about the food, is Coda has a wonderful fusion, which sort of reflects in some parts your heritage,
yes,
but your love.
French, Vietnamese, and also my heritage, Italian and Indian. So at Tonka, I'm actually going to do Indian flavours, touch on my Indian side, which is my father's side, and also venture into a bit of Malaysian and Sri Lankan food.
Mm-hmm. So and also
Asian as well, because we just love, I still love Vietnamese and Thai food.
And and jump in any of you about the way that our cuisine is going. Somebody, and I was having a discussion with an American guy the other day who's just come to Melbourne and who's going to open a restaurant, and we were talking about is there such a thing as an Australian cuisine, and I'm sure you each have an opinion on this, and I think it's very much driven by the different waves of immigration have seen our cuisine evolve.
It's a melting pot of different cuisines. That's Australian cuisine.
And actually, when I was an apprentice, when I started my apprenticeship, and Michael, when did you come? 96?
No. 95.
You came 95. I started my apprenticeship in 96. And actually, as an apprentice in Melbourne, felt I wasn't classically trained like, say, Michael would have been in London and in France, because there's no definitive training or cuisine in Australia. Mm. I worked with German chefs and Austrian chefs and some French chefs, but it wasn't like in
where did you train, Adam?
At the Hilton on the Park.
Right.
I started in a hotel. So there wasn't no real classical training as such. Well, you couldn't define classical training. You read all these books from Europe, from France and Italy, and you go, well, we have no history, really.
We're such a young country. If we compare ourselves to France or to Italy or Spain or any of those European countries, they've been around for, 1,000 years or more. We're 200 years old, so we can't be expected to have developed a classical cuisine as they have. But I think one of the joys we do have, as Michael alluded to, there is such a wonderful melting pot of cuisines that we borrow from because they're already here. And it's good to see you're doing Indian flavours, because I think we're going to get awfully sick of tacos very, very shortly.
Exactly.
Right. Absolutely, yeah.
I was going to do Indian Mexican. No, I'm joking.
That melting pot.
I remember when I arrived, it was very heavily Italian influenced, Italian influenced. And now it's sort of more Asian style. Yep. And I think that, you know, coming up with the concept for the Smith, like we've got a global menu and we've sort of taken cuisines from all over the world and all over my travels and created a venue where people can come and sit, eat and drink. And it's
got to be reflective of your personality. And I think that's when you're saying you've got a global menu, those places you've worked, those countries you've worked in, you draw from each of those. Katrina, I'm sure it's the same for you, that there is a global focus on what we do quite locally.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my training was a lot of Italian fine dining. Mm-hmm. So I learnt a lot about pastas and sauces and making things about the flavour and using the local ingredients and using the freshest. So I'm trying to obviously push that into Joe's, now formerly known as Greasy Joe's. Thought I'd better put that in there for you.
You can refer to it as Joe's. I'll just keep doing the
FKA. Did you just get a big texter and scrub out the greasy part of the sign?
Yeah, and scrubbed it out. And cleaned it up a little bit and new
tables.
It's a
great spot, though.
It's an amazing spot. And once there's all new path being put out the front, so once that's going to be finished, we're getting extra tables.
Finish that confounded building on the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. And somebody goes into there and they'll get the kitchen and everything done. But we're trying to use the American-inspired and still make the institutional Joe's food, but using my influence of Italian and the Victorian produce that I'm so passionate about, and making it as close to my sort of food as possible as well.
We are very lucky to have incredible produce, and I think that goes without saying. We have a number of microclimates here that mean that we can grow rice up on the Murray River and that sort of thing. Michael, compared to the UK, I think you could probably attest to how wonderfully diverse our agriculture is.
It is. It's fantastic, and you know, and it's getting better and better and better all the time. And I think that, you know, there was a time maybe back in the mid 90s where I would have said that produce was better in the UK and more readily available. But I actually think that it's swung in Australia's favour now. Especially Victoria's.
And I guess the more demand from guys like yourselves, and sorry, Katrina, guys and girls like yourselves, for specific produce, people are going to start growing it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it's all supply and demand. And it's like, you know, I'm very stringent on what I actually want and what products I use and how I want them grown and how I want them farmed. And now there's a market for it, so it's working.
There is. I was having a discussion with Peter Gilmore probably about a year ago now, and he was talking about he wanted a particular type of carrot and he couldn't get it, so he went to a farmer who was able to start producing that for him, and now there is a demand across Sydney because Peter has these carrots and everybody wants these. I think
Absolutely.
It was carrots. Mm. So, and do you make those demands yourselves of your producers?
Yes.
Yeah. If you've got a relationship with them, you go, this is the product I want. Mm. And they're more obliging to, you know, now this farmer that would have taken on growing the carrots with Peter Gilmore has now got probably quite a good business out of it.
Absolutely.
Every chef in Australia wants these carrots.
And then we're seeing things like the little veggie patches that have popped up on top of Federation Square where restaurants and particularly CBD restaurants can go and grow some herbs or some tomatoes or whatever. How important is that to have your own little space to grow?
I think it's really, really important because at the moment I'm trying to source some chilies so that when we've got the beer garden done out the back, I'm actually going to have the little Veggie Patch Co. type boxes and look for my own chilies so that we can really make our own tomato chili chutney and our own vine tomatoes and all of that to push Joe's further and further and our chefs further.
I brought this up. I was in Perth on the weekend down at Margaret River for Gourmet Escape, where they had like Rene Redzepi.
How was it, by the way?
It was fantastic, unreal, really good. Except Heston couldn't make it because
that was an awful tragedy.
His two chefs got killed, so it was fantastic. Terrible. And I did a discussion. Terrible. It was chefs of tomorrow, the next generation. Then we were talking about food miles and all this kind of stuff. So, but it was a can of worms. I think it's great you can grow your own vegetables and have these little patches, but it's not for a restaurant like myself, and I know Michael probably will speak the same.
I'm glad
you cannot grow enough. So our demand
is far too high for the supply.
Yeah,
look, I think it's a romantic notion and it's great in a in an ideal world, yep. but we live in the real world. And, you know, I do 400 customers a night.
Yep.
And I can't find a vesi patch big enough to grow my vegetables. You know, every single day
yep.
I've got untold amounts of vegetables and seafood coming through the back door. And yep. it's really difficult. But having said that, there are specialist things that we do put on the menu that we have specifically grown.
Yeah. Which is the way that I think that things are going to go. It's 18 minutes to 2 here on Joy 94.9. This is Cravings. I'm Pete Dillon, Adam De Silva, Michael Lambie and Katrina Hyam in the studio with me for about another 18 minutes before the boys from Fender Bender come in and get you all revved up for the rest of the afternoon. We'll have a couple of messages and be back here on the gayest station in the nation. It's Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Oh, that's one of my favourite songs. That's Jason Mraz with I'm Yours, a terrific track. And the one I played earlier, in case you were wondering, was Small Things by the Audrey's, a terrific Australian band. I like that as well. This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9, 13 minutes to 2. Michael Lambie is in the studio here from the Smith in Paran with a beautiful global cuisine, as we've discovered. Katrina's here from Joe's. I'm no longer going to do the FKA bit. And Adam De Silva's here from Coda and soon to be Tonka. We're talking just while that song was going on, guys, about the impossibility at the minute of finding chefs in Melbourne. Now, there are theories. One of them is that they're all going overseas the moment they get a qualification so that they can do a stage or two with René Redzepi or with, you know, in Mugritz in Spain or wherever. There are other theories that are about, Michael, what's yours? Why can't we find chefs? I mean, you're all looking for chefs to be part of your team.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, maybe it's part of the Gen Y era that, you know, people want it all now and they don't want to work for 4 years to get their apprenticeship. You know, it's really hard to find people that are truly passionate about restaurants and food and that want to be really good at cooking. It's hard now.
And you get these chaps in that, I'm assuming it was a chap that came in and said they want to work Monday to Friday, no dinners, $1,000 a week.
Yeah, and that's, and you know, and I'm sure Adam will have the same story. And it's like, you know, my whole recruitment policy now is that we go for young people that have the right attitude, that want to work hard, and we train them. And if we can't find those people, then we have to struggle on. But to find qualified chefs, it's rare as hen's teeth.
I don't really go for qualified. I go for it's attitude out of all of them.
Yeah.
And in my, you know, in my kitchen now, I've been from called multicultural. I've got like two Indonesians, two Koreans, two Nepalese, an indigenous.
You are the United Colours of Benetton in your kitchen, aren't you?
Yeah. Two Indians,
well, same.
A couple of token Aussies, and a lot of them these came to Australia on student visas. Start off as kitchen hands, and asked me if they can cook. Now they're actually cooking, and they're the best, most appreciative staff.
I reckon that's exactly right. You know, you get people that want to come in, they want to wash dishes, they want to sweep the floor, and then you give them an apprenticeship, and that's what we do as well.
Katrina, you are Gen Y.
Yes, I am.
So whilst your buddy's sitting beside you talking about this is a Gen Y thing, what do you think it is? Do you have a similar theory?
I think that even from what we were doing at the deli before, we were doing that. We were hiring the guys with the right attitude at 15 or 16 and training them up to be serving customers and being a barista and being in the kitchen with us and all of that. But we get to the chefs, and the chefs now, because we were saying off here before about the master chefs, and everybody comes in and they suddenly think they can cook five courses, and they realise that the blood, sweat and tears that we put into the food is not a 5 second thing anymore, and they want the pay now, and they want the position now, and they want to be the sous chef or the head chef without actually doing,
earning their chops.
Yeah, and doing the hard yards.
Because it's a much harder thing. It's not just putting food on a plate anymore. It's about managing human resources. It's about managing budgets. It's about payroll. It's about industrial relations. It's all of those things that have to be done outside of putting food onto a plate.
Keeping up with the trends as well is massive.
How hard is that to keep up with what's happening around the world? Adam, hop off your phone.
It's very difficult, and I think that, you know, you've just got to keep abreast of everything and you've got to look what's on the horizon and what's going to be the new thing. And I mean, it's great that Adam's doing something that's Indian, you know, it's fantastic.
Can Indian be the next Mexican wave?
No, but I just don't think anyone's doing it properly in Melbourne. They're all kind of dodgy.
It's true. There's no good Indian restaurants.
You can't go and have like a nice glass of wine with it. Good service, you know, nice, good produce because they don't use, you know, not bagging them, but they don't use, you know, great produce that we will use, and also not make it as heavy or stodgy.
I was going to say, people, Indian in Melbourne, and you immediately think of walking one of those places with a Bain Marie, and that smell that sort of assaults you as you walk past. That's not what Indian food is about.
So it's going to be my, you know, modern take and Aussie interpretation of it.
Is there a region in India you're focused on? Is it Rajasthani?
All over. But I've got a great chef from Mumbai working with me at the moment, and I'm my father's from Madras, but also I've got Goan heritage as well, so we'll touch on all those areas. But just great dishes. Not going to be anything that's...
And Chrissy Manfield's doing something in Sydney at Universal. Yes. She has an incredible understanding of food from that region of the world, and we don't have that here.
No.
So maybe that you're going to bring it
back, like George brought Greek back.
No, but it's true though. Like I've recently been in the UK, and the Indian cuisine in the UK is fantastic.
Mm.
And you come to Australia, and it's just not happening.
No, it's not. And you've got guys like Stevie Powell in the UK who are doing incredible things in pop up spots. Or he's now no longer pop up, but who've taken that idea of Indian food and or Sri Lankan food and started to bring it into a modern cuisine. It's not just a Ruby Murray anymore.
A Ruby Murray.
The other two are going, what?
A Ruby Murray, a curry.
It's a
slang. English slang.
A similar sort of thing. So if you are listening and you have a desire that you might like to cook, Adam, talk us through again the process of the Cook for Your Career program.
The Cook for Your Career.
Can anybody?
No, it's not like a MasterChef. It's not like a MasterChef audition. You have to be. you have to be a serious cook and studying in a Civil Certificate 3 course. Sorry.
Yep. So you're 2 years into a TAFE course, essentially.
Yes, exactly. And you just apply. You create a dish which you're most proud of.
You go and borrow from Michael Lambie's
menu.
Just come and borrow one of mine. I'm sure you've got a couple on your menu.
Yeah.
Or go and borrow one of Chris Lucas's. I don't know. Borrow somebody's.
Yep. Or just buy a cookbook and copy it.
Yes.
Which everyone else does.
Yeah, like everyone else does. Like all chefs do.
And then they say it's authentic.
Yes. Keep going, Adam.
So, and then you put the dish on the Facebook page. Get as many mates. So if you've got lots of friends on Facebook, you've got a higher chance of winning.
Because you want people to vote for you.
You want people to vote for you. And then you have a reader's choice, a people's choice also. And then we'll do a cook-off, come down to the top three around the state. They'll fly to Melbourne for the Food and Wine Festival. They'll do a cook-off on the first weekend.
How are you going to determine as a judge whether the person who's prepared that dish has got the right attitude? Because they may be able to cook exceptionally well, but how are you going to define the attitude to choose the right person?
Well, you can tell someone's attitude in 5 minutes in talking to them, just by if they're arrogant or not, or really...
I've met a lot of arrogant chefs who can cook incredibly well.
Yeah, I'm Michael Lambie.
I'm not arrogant at all.
I'm glad you're sitting in the middle, Katrina.
Yeah, so am I.
I'm shy. Just
you are actually shy.
It comes across as being arrogant. That's
when you walked in the door, I thought, it's going to be a difficult interview.
No,
you've been very good. You've been very good.
I'm
very
joking.
Well behaved.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Young chefs just feel the wrong... They're actually positive and actually have a real passion about food.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about, they talk about food and they're wanting to win.
Mm.
And also, you know, just being really personable and kind of positive.
So there's a bit of drive.
Yeah, there's a bit of drive.
Michael Lambie, do you have a website for The Smith?
Yes, we do. www.thesmithperan.com.au.
So people can get you open 7 days a week?
We're open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. Lunch and dinner.
And
bar is open all day, all afternoon.
And where in Peran are you?
We're at 213 High Street. I look forward to seeing everyone there.
Well, if you do get down to 213 High Street, go have a look at The Smith in Peran. Go and check out Michael's food. Have a drink at the bar. Say good day if he's in the kitchen. Monday to Friday lunches only, I think.
No, that was a joke.
Katrina, if people want to come down or have a look at Joe's online, have a look at the refurb that's been done, because
yeah,
it is
absolutely.
An old Melbourne institution. I remember many, many decades ago going into Greasy Joe's after a night out at some ungodly hour in the middle of the night and eating hamburgers
I
and
think
stuff.
a lot of people have that same story somewhere along the line. Yes. Yeah, look, we're about to go into menu change now. I've been there a couple of months, so we're going to be really upping the ante, which will be great. The sliders are going really well. We've got a popcorn prawn on with Thousand Island dressing, which is actually selling really well. So we're going to be...
I don't know why Am's laughing at you, but you may start
laughing at Michael.
He's laughing at Michael. They're doing googly eyes to each other, I think, in between.
Perhaps they can take one another out for a drink.
Exactly.
When
we're going to get a studio after this.
Do their own little interview with each other. It's joesbar.com.au.
Excellent.
And we're at 66 Ackland Street in St Kilda. And open Monday to Wednesday from 4 o'clock onwards, and then Thursday to Sunday from lunch. Lunch right through to dinner.
Terrific. And Adam, people want to find Coda, first of all, on the web.
On the web, it is codarestaurant.com.au.
And if they would like to find you in the street, you're in Flinders Lane.
Flinders Lane.
A couple doors up from Chin Chin.
A couple doors down from Chin Chin.
Oh, down, up. It's confusing.
Down.
You're in the same bloody street.
Down, walking down. Towards.
Yes, and you've got to go down a laneway.
Down laneway, Oliver Lane corner, Oliver Lane and Flinders Lane. So it's actually directly behind the Grand Hyatt.
Beautiful. And Tonka opens in February, so people can keep an eye out for that as well. Mm. Guys, it's been great to have you in the studio. Thank you for coming in and taking your time away from your stoves.
Thank you.
Cookforyourcareer.com.au is the website for the program Adam is involved with. I will be back next week, next Saturday at 1 p.m. for yet another perhaps cornucopia of chefs. Thank you for your contributions to the program today, and I shall see you then. Stay tuned for the boys from Fender Bender. This has been Cravings on Joy 94.9. Have a very lovely Saturday afternoon.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.